Many communities in the Commonwealth already have smoke-free legislation, but a bill introduced in this year's General Assembly session would seek to make such policies law statewide. Among its most visible supporters is the governor.
The damage is shocking. Almost 8,000 lives lost to smoking in Kentucky each year. 8,000.
On this week's Eastern Standard, efforts to create a smoke-free Kentucky. We'd like to hear from you with your questions, comments, or personal stories. Write to us right now by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Post a comment on the WEKU Facebook page or send us a tweet at WEKUEST. In just a few minutes, we'll open the phones as well. That email address again, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. It's time for Eastern Standard, right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, it's time for Eastern Standard. I'm John Hingsbergen. Democratic Representative Susan Westrom from House District 79, representing Fayette County, has introduced smoking legislation for the past 5 years, including 2015. She said the Kentucky General Assembly has waited 12 years for more communities across the state to adopt local smoke-free ordinances, and that hasn't happened. Westrom says she's encouraged by a recent Kentucky Health Issues poll that found 66% of adults in the Commonwealth support a statewide law against smoking in indoor public places. She believes that 2015 could be the year that that legislation passes.
I think it's taken 4 years for many of the legislators who have been in place that time to recognize that it's not happening at the local level. This is an issue that the local officials don't want to address for political reasons, and they're hoping that we will address it at the state level.
Governor Beshear has also recently reiterated support of comprehensive statewide smoking legislation. Here's what he had to say about it in his address on the State of the Commonwealth just last week.
Another issue, smoking. Some people are still fighting the notion that cigarette smoke is toxic. Folks, this is the 21st century. It's time to accept modern medicine and science, and it's even more time to protect our children and our workers from exposure. Kentucky has the highest smoking rate in this nation. It's one reason we lead the nation in heart disease, respiratory illnesses, and other chronic diseases. In fact, when it comes to preventable illnesses and deaths, every single study concludes that nothing is as devastating to Kentucky as smoking and tobacco use. The damage is shocking. Almost 8,000 lives lost to smoking in Kentucky each year. 8,000. Almost $2 billion in tobacco-related health care costs each year. More than $2 billion in lost productivity each year. During this session, I will again support comprehensive statewide smoke-free legislation. Two-thirds of states already have smoke-free laws. Half of all Kentuckians already live in communities which have them. And a new survey just out shows that 66% of Kentucky adults favor such a law, while only 29% oppose it. Last month, I strengthened protections for state workers and visitors to state properties by toughening our anti-tobacco policies. Furthermore, smoke-free policies are good for business. That's why 90% of the Kentucky Chamber of Commerce members, 90% of them, support a statewide smoke-free law. It is time. It is time to protect all Kentucky workers and all of our children from secondhand smoke.
Governor Steve Beshear during his State of the Commonwealth address just last week. Over the past few decades, we've seen American views of smoking vastly change as related health concerns have come to light. Already many colleges, restaurants, public areas across the Bluegrass have smoke-free policies. Where will the current legislation go from here? How has Kentucky, where tobacco was once a major driving economic force, adjusted to the changing views of tobacco use and regulation. This is Eastern Standard, and we are interested in hearing from you with your questions, comments, and personal stories about smoke-free policies, smoking bans, tobacco use. We'd like to hear from smokers as well as those who are opposed to smoking, would like to never see anyone smoke again. Please give us a call at 800-621-8890 or send an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. With us in the studio today, four guests, and we have another guest on the telephone line. First up, we have Dr. Robert Pierce, Extension Tobacco Specialist at the University of Kentucky. Dr. Pierce, we're going to learn more about what you do there. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Also, Dr. Jack Rutherford, a Chair Professor with Exercise and Sports Science at Eastern Kentucky University and co-chair of Eastern's Tobacco-Free Task Force. We're going to learn about how that smoke-free policy on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University is working out. Thank you, Dr. Rutherford.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
Also with us, Angela Criswell, Manager for the Tobacco Prevention and Cessation Program for the Kentucky Department of Public Health. From the point of view of statewide legislation, I guess if a law passes, it's going to end up in your hands?
That's correct, and we're very glad to be here today.
Thank you for being with us. We'll also meet Renee Fox, who works with Eastern Kentucky University's Healthy You at EKU program, and we'll get a little more about her exact title later in the program. But let's go to the telephone and talk to Amy Barkley, chair of the Statewide Smoke-Free Coalition. And Amy, am I correct that you're one of the creators of this current legislation for statewide smoking policy?
Well, we certainly had input on it. It's a big team of people that have been working with Representative Westrum and Senator Julie Rocky Adams on legislation these past several years.
What is before the legislature this year when they come back in February? What are they being asked to consider making law across the Commonwealth?
Well, Representative Westrum has filed House Bill 145, which is available online if people want to take a look at it. It's very similar to legislation that's been filed the last four sessions of the General Assembly. It's a 10-page bill, but in a nutshell, it covers all indoor workplaces and public places in Kentucky. There are just a few minor exemptions for places where tobacco research is being done, and so tobacco products may have to be burned or used in conjunction with that. So basically, any place that has employees or invites the public in would need to be smoke-free indoors and within 15 feet of the doors and windows, and that's really just to prevent the smoke from entering the building.
This includes my auto mechanic shop when I go to take my car in to have it repaired, a restaurant where I might go to have lunch, bars, bowling alleys, places where they're commonly known as places where smoking has been more than tolerated, almost welcomed?
That's correct, and I'm glad you gave a few examples because this has been a real issue for us the past several years. We did spell out in the bill that if your workplace is also your private residence, you know, for example, maybe you prepare taxes or you're a seamstress or something like that, of course, you can smoke there. It's primarily your private residence. You just also conduct business there. The only exception to that is that if you operate, there are many of these in-home daycares or adult daycares, you know, sort of senior living places that is a home where the person lives. If they are caring for children or health or home health kind of service, they would not be able to have smoking in there. Those are the only exceptions to private residences. Now, we also clarified, because this came up, people who are opposed sort of try to take it to the extreme and say, well, you know, what about the farmer in his tool shed or his barn? You know, can he not smoke? Again, we made a specific provision for that. It wouldn't have been covered no matter what, because again, it's really, there may be business conducted there, but that's part of their home as well. But we specifically said, you know, it doesn't cover like agricultural buildings or places where tobacco is processed or dried or whatever, you know, cured, that kind of thing, that is not covered. But yes, you know, an auto repair shop indoors, yeah, would be covered. And all restaurants, all bars, all offices, that sort of thing.
Are there any provisions for how close to the entrance of a building smoking would be permitted? I know that a lot of policies there will be signs saying no smoking within 25 feet of this entrance. Campus such as Eastern Kentucky University, I assume the University of Kentucky has a similar policy in place, have declared themselves smoke-free, meaning you can't go outside. You got to go off campus. You got to go on some other property. But what about restaurants and other facilities like that?
The restaurants would still be allowed to have smoking outdoors. Again, the law just has this provision that says you can't smoke within 15 feet of a door or a window. I don't envision the signs saying that. That's just kind of a guideline. It is part of the law, so it could technically be enforced, but that's just to prevent sort of the cluster of people around a door, and then everyone has to sort of run the gauntlet and go through the smoke to get in the building, or, you know, have people sitting right by the door smoking, and it comes in and pollutes the air indoors. But I would note that, like you said, many of our universities have made their entire campus not just smoke-free but tobacco-free, and a lot of private businesses have done that too. Certainly the larger corporations will sometimes have a completely smoke-free campus, and hospitals as well. And that's, you know, again, to prevent any secondhand smoke from entering anywhere. It's also to address the third-hand smoke issue, which you may have heard about, where, you know, if a healthcare worker, for instance, smokes, the smoke gets on their clothing, and then they have to go in and, you know, treat a patient, and actually there is a danger from the smoke that sort of combines with the chemicals in the fabrics and off gases and so forth. So there are good reasons for these outdoor air policies, but the state law will not deal with the outdoors, just what's considered sort of a reasonable distance from the door.
Okay, let's turn to Dr. Robert Pierce, Extension Tobacco Specialist at the University of Kentucky. Dr. Pierce, why might a statewide smoke-free policy, some would call it a ban, be a bad idea?
Well, I don't know that we would argue necessarily a good idea or a bad idea, but I think it would be important to recognize that it would have a negative impact on certain folks in our agricultural economy of our state. Historically, tobacco has been a mainstay, not as important as it once was, but still there, according to the 2012 census for agriculture, there are 4,500 tobacco farms remaining in Kentucky. So we've got 4,500 farms and farm families who are still depending on that crop for a portion of their income. That represents about 6% of the total farms in Kentucky, and the last several years, that's been about $400 million in farm receipts from the sale of tobacco, representing about 7% of our overall agricultural economy.
Where does that fit in perspective of, say, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and maybe 50 years ago?
Right. Well, if you look back to the period of the 90s, in that time frame, tobacco receipts made up about 24% of our total agricultural income, now down to about 7%. In terms of the numbers, we've had a tremendous drop-off in tobacco farms. The 1992 Ag Census listed about some 70,000 tobacco farms, and now we're down to 4,500 in just 20 years.
We'll come back to Dr. Robert Pierce, Extension Tobacco Specialist at the University of Kentucky, and our other guests as we talk about statewide smoking policies. Smoke-free Kentucky, is that a possibility? 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Post on Facebook or send us a tweet at WEKUEST. That phone number again, 800-621-8890. There have been big changes in our culture, even in Kentucky, since the days of Mad Men and the days when people would go to work and sit in their office and smoke, maybe even have a cocktail as part of their work environment. Smoking is, there's a legislation, and it's called House Bill 145, is currently being considered by the Kentucky General Assembly, that would create a smoke-free environment in public workplaces. And essentially any place that we are likely to go indoors to conduct business. We're interested in your opinion of making Kentucky a smoke-free environment by calling 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. We're especially interested in hearing from smokers who might find that your life has been changed and how are you coping with that, as well as from those who are in favor of such a statewide ban. Why should it be a statewide, and why do you feel it needs to be a statewide legislation? Or likewise, we raised the question, and many people would say this should be considered and dealt with at the local level. There are those who say, well, we've waited long enough. 800-621-8890, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Back to Dr. Robert Pierce briefly, just in terms of the economy and the status of smoking, not smoking as such, but tobacco in the economy of Kentucky. And your job at the University of Kentucky, what is that all about? Is that a vestige or a leftover of the tobacco industry influence in Kentucky?
Well, it is a part of it. As I mentioned, or as we know, tobacco has been a big part of Kentucky agriculture. And so as the state university, land-grant university, part of our mission is to support the enterprises that the farmers of the state are doing, and tobacco, of course, being a big part of that. So, and we still have tobacco production, so that's why we still have tobacco specialists who are working in that area. So I work on various types of research, looking at production methods. We're even looking now at how some of our production methods may affect the actual chemistry of the leaf, which potentially affects the constituents that are in the smoke. So those are some of the things that we're doing. I also go out and work directly with growers. If they have a problem on their farm, I'll go out and help diagnose that problem, give them solutions, hopefully give them some solutions to help them remain economically viable with that enterprise.
I mean, is there any effort to reduce the number of tobacco farms and cause these people to move into some other area in order to support their families?
Well, we're not consciously trying to move them in that area. The market is moving them in that area. As we've seen, as I mentioned, there's been a drastic reduction in the number of farms. So over the last several years, we have seen a lot of farms get out of tobacco production and get into other enterprises. In some cases, they got out of tobacco production and simply retired from the farming business. So we are seeing that, but the market is really driving them. And the university is offering support in those areas by trying to work with them on other programs, other enterprises that they can diversify their operation to in some ways help offset that loss of income from tobacco.
Dr. Robert Pierce, Extension Tobacco Specialist at the University of Kentucky. Let's turn to another university, Eastern Kentucky University, and Dr. Jack Rutherford is Chair Professor with Exercise and Sports Science at EKU, co-chair of the Tobacco-Free Task Force. Eastern Kentucky University is a tobacco-free campus. There are signs pretty well posted everywhere. Is this campus, we're on this campus right now, is it actually tobacco-free by your current assessment?
Well, almost. of course, let me just say at the outset, we want to make Eastern Kentucky University a healthy campus. And in so doing, it was sort of hypocritical for us to teach in our classes the health risks of tobacco use and yet condone tobacco use on our campus. And so we're now making our message consistent with our mission. So, and as President Benson has pointed out more than once, it's the right thing to do for our faculty, staff, and students.
What's the history of that tobacco-free policy? I know that it took full effect officially last summer. I guess there was a plan to do that in June when it was between terms, the major terms of the academic year, when the campus would not be full of people affected immediately. But how far back does this decision go?
Actually, the original policy was drafted in 2006. I was on the advisory board at that time that drafted the policy, and that policy established the 25-foot rule around doors and entranceways. That policy, unfortunately, was not very effective. Most people still congregated in and around doorways and used tobacco, and they discarded the cigarette butts on the on the streets and on the sidewalks. And so it was just, breathing the air, it was just not a healthy climate for our faculty, staff, and students. So it took a long time coming, but in 2014, when President Benson announced the new policy that we would be entirely tobacco-free, we certainly embraced it. And co-chair Renee Fox and I, who heads up the Healthy U at EKU, jumped on board, and we've been primarily educational in our efforts thus far. As of course, we are an educational institution, so we're making sure the message is clear, that it's understood, and I think as we move forward, we'll see the adherence levels increase.
What kind of opposition has existed? Have you heard from students, from faculty, from staff?
Primarily students. We do have a small resistance that likes to flaunt the fact that they're going to not adhere to the policy. We do have a program of tobacco-free ambassadors that walk the campus, like our neighbors to the north at UK, that deliver the message in a soft, educational approach, and we hope they adhere based on that.
We're talking creating a smoke-free Commonwealth of Kentucky on this week's Eastern Standard. You are invited to be part of the conversation. 800-621-8890. Send an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. You can send a tweet at wekuest. We'd like you to follow our Twitter account anyway for updates on the program and announcements about program topics. That's at wekuest. Post on the WEKU Facebook page. That number again, 800-621-8890. Let's turn to Angela Criswell from the statewide perspective. Manager for the Tobacco Prevention and Cessation Program for the Kentucky Department of Public Health. What's going on right now? What does your office currently do to encourage tobacco cessation, smoking cessation, or to encourage the message of prevention?
Yes, well, we really have three parts to our overall mission when it comes to the issue of tobacco use in Kentucky. And this is guided by CDC best practices. And so our focus is on preventing youth initiation of tobacco use, promoting cessation among those adults and youth who do use tobacco, and protecting non-smokers from exposure to secondhand smoke. And then also trying to address some of the disparities that you see in the impact that tobacco use has. So when it comes to cessation, I would say the most important thing that we do is we basically provide the Kentucky's version of the quit line, which is accessible through 1-800-QUIT-NOW. That's a national toll-free number, and when you call that number from a Kentucky area code, you reach our service provider, and this is offered completely free of charge to anyone who either lives or works in Kentucky. Coaching for tobacco cessation. We also right now are able to provide at no cost for anyone who is uninsured and enrolls in coaching. We can provide up to 8 weeks of nicotine replacement therapy.
Does your office have a role in the proposed legislation or in determining public policy regarding smoking and tobacco use, or is it primarily a matter of executing the law as put in place?
Well, we have several pieces to this. Our role is to educate and inform, and that's the general public, and that's also policymakers and decision makers. And then once the law passes, we will have a role in implementation. And I will say that the experience has been at the local level and in other states. There are 24 states that have a statewide smoke-free policy that's comprehensive. The policies are largely self-enforcing, and I think the campuses that have 100% tobacco-free campus policies as well have experienced this. Most people want to be law-abiding, and once they know what the rules are, they want to adhere to them. You know, there are some who don't choose to abide, but that's primarily the minority when that happens. So, you know, our role will be to provide some training for the local health departments and for any at the local level who will be the boots on the ground, so to speak, and providing any sort of enforcement.
We were talking about the economy and its roots to a great extent in the tobacco industry. In Kentucky, I would imagine smoking has been a matter of culture. There's been a lot of smoking in Kentucky, partly because of the economic connection. How has that changed? You talk about youth initiation. What are the rates of young people beginning to smoke?
Right. Well, okay. Kentucky certainly has led the nation not in a favorable light when it comes to tobacco use. So our adult tobacco rate of use is 26.5%, and that's currently second highest in the nation. Previously, we were number one. Now we've dropped number two. So this is one of those cases when you're really glad to be number two. Mm. When it comes to youth smoking, our current rate is 17.9%, and that's in comparison with the national rate that's 15.7. We're currently sixth in the nation when it comes to youth tobacco or youth smoking. And, you know, we've seen tremendous progress. I think when they first did the Youth Behavioral Risk Survey, our rate of youth smoking was upwards of 40%. So, I mean, there's been tremendous progress, but it's still not where we need to be, which ideally would be no tobacco use. In the most recent Surgeon General's report that came out last year, the Surgeon General noted that if no one smoked, we could prevent one out of three cancer deaths. That's really significant.
That original Surgeon General's report that showed up on the cigarette packages, mm-hmm. when was that? Was that like 1960 or sometime in that range?
Yeah, I believe it was the late 1960s.
Yeah, 1964 is when the first U.S. Surgeon General's report on smoking and health came out, and the warnings. I'm not sure exactly when those were implemented, but that's when you really began to see the public discourse about the impact of smoking on health.
What if a person who's employed at a current situation, maybe in a restaurant or a facility right now that's currently allowing them to smoke at work, a statewide smoking policy is implemented, and it makes it difficult for them to work? Is there help beyond the smoking cessation programs to replace the income a person may lose because they can no longer work in the place that they and you know, they prefer to go home and, you know, they can smoke whenever they like?
Well, you know, I would just say there is no constitutional right to smoke, and you know, smoking is not a protected class under the Constitution. When it comes to those who smoke at work, they're simply asked to take it outside. You know, unless you work on a tobacco-free campus where you have to leave the campus, then the solution is to step outside. And I will say that for those who want to quit smoking, this is one of the most beneficial policies you can have because it reinforces the choice that they themselves are making. And when you look at the public support for smoke-free policy, among those former smokers, the level of support is currently 71%. And that to me shows those who formerly smoked, they recognize the significance of this policy.
Does a smoke-free policy, for instance, with a campus like Eastern Kentucky University, does it affect the insurance rates, the health insurance costs to employees and to the university? Or on a statewide level, does it affect employers and the citizens in terms of the cost of their health insurance? Let's start with Dr. Jack Rutherford from EKU.
Well, I would say yes. I don't have the figures at hand, but I would say certainly it's got to affect we're self-insured. But that's not the primary motivation for us on this one. You know, we want to make our faculty, staff, and students healthier when they leave EKU. We want them to be healthier people. Simple.
And insurance rates overall for the state beyond the campus, is there any study or any research on how that – I know the governor has been obviously in the forefront of the nation and leading regarding the provision of health care and the Connect Health Exchange related to the Affordable Care Act. Where does that fit in economically? Does it cost us more to have a smoke-free policy is my main question, I guess.
Oh, it definitely does not cost us more to have a smoke-free policy. It will bring substantial savings. And while I cannot assign a dollar figure directly to that at this point, we do know that healthcare expenditures from secondhand smoke alone each year in Kentucky are estimated to be $128.4 million. Healthcare expenses related to tobacco use are $1.92 billion. And for Medicare alone, that's just under $600 million of that. So to the extent that you protect people from secondhand smoke and they don't suffer the health consequences of that exposure, and to the extent that you promote tobacco cessation, the savings will be immense.
Where do e-cigarettes fit into this picture of a tobacco-free policy? They're essentially designed, I guess, as a replacement for smoking and to allow people to continue to get their fix of nicotine. Where does it fit in, for instance, on the EKU campus policy?
Well, it's included, and for good reason. There's not strong evidence, there's not convincing evidence that they are tobacco cessation device. They're not supported by the various federal agencies as such. I was reading just some data from the American Association of Poison Control Centers just yesterday, as a matter of fact. And, of course, the incidence among our youth of e-cigarette use is skyrocketing. The data suggests that the number of poisoning incidents involving e-cigarettes and liquid nicotine has jumped by 156% in the last year. That's more than 14-fold since 2011. And most of those calls involve children under the age of 6, one of whom died. So there's real risk involved with e-cigarette use along with tobacco.
Let's go to the telephone. Let's get one caller in before we need to take another break. Let's talk to Alfred from Williamsburg, Kentucky. Alfred, thank you for being part of this week's Eastern Standard. You are on the air. Go right ahead.
All right. I just want to say it's, you know, I was born and raised in Kentucky, and everybody that I lived here with as I was growing up made their living off tobacco. I've smoked for 50 years. What I don't understand is how can people control your lives. They can say what you can do, what you can't do. There's too many people telling us what we can do, what we can't do, making laws and making it happen. And they're doing it every day. And I don't understand why you can do this. And I know smoking, you know, if I got respect for people, I go outside and smoke. I don't smoke around kids. I don't do all that. But do you give me a law to tell me I can't do this? Give me a law to tell me I can't do that? And you're making too many laws to control people's lives. Let people control their own lives. Last I was born, we were free Americans. What happened to free Americans?
Let me ask Amy Barkley of the Statewide Smoke-Free Coalition and involved with this proposed legislation to respond to that. Alfred, thank you so much for your call. We're really glad to hear from you on today's Eastern Standard. Amy, you've got a minute to respond.
Happy to answer. If everyone was like Alfred or Albert, I'm sorry, I didn't catch it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It is Alfred.
If everyone was like Alfred and had the courtesy to step outside and not expose other people to the toxins in secondhand smoke, we wouldn't need a law. But that's not happening. And he is still free to smoke, just not where he harms other people. I think a lot of people discount the dangers of secondhand smoke. It does kill nearly 1,000 people in Kentucky every year. And just as he has a right to smoke, the rest of us have a right to breathe smoke-free air and not breathe his smoke. So that's really what it's all about, is peaceful coexistence between non-smokers and smokers. They're still free to smoke. They just have to take it outside where no one else is hurt.
This is Eastern Standard. 800-621-8890 is our number. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest. Post on Facebook. We're discussing a smoke-free Kentucky on this week's Eastern Standard.
Them nicotine slaves, they're all the same. At a petting party or a poker game, everything's got to stop while you smoke that cigarette.
Smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette.
Tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate that you just hate to make him wait, but you just gotta have another cigarette.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen with our guest, and we're discussing the possibility of a smoke-free Kentucky. It is proposed in the General Assembly. House Bill 145 would forbid smoking in public places, essentially in indoor public places. And we have with us Amy Barkley, chair of the Statewide Smoke-Free Coalition, who is involved in helping to push that legislation forward. We have with us Dr. Jack Rutherford, chair of and professor with exercise and sports science at Eastern Kentucky University. He's been involved in the EKU tobacco-free policy. Dr. Robert Pierce, extension tobacco specialist at the University of Kentucky. And also Angela Criswell, manager of tobacco prevention and cessation for the Kentucky Department of Public Health. In a moment, we're going to meet Renee Fox. But Angela, I know you had a comment in response to Alfred and his concerns about freedom
Well, I just remembered something that I heard at the Smoke-Free Kentucky rally that I attended. I believe it was just this past year. One of the speakers was the Medal of Honor recipient, Sergeant Dakota Meyer. And I wrote down something that he said at that point, because it really distilled down why this policy is so important. He said, "This bill is not against freedom. It is about saving lives and protecting people's health, which is what laws are supposed to do." So I think that really gets to why this policy is so important. And I will just say that there are more than 33,000 non-smokers who die every year from coronary heart disease caused by secondhand smoke exposure. Even 30 minutes of exposure may increase your risk of a heart attack or stroke for up to 24 hours. So it really is about protecting people's health and saving lives.
There's still time for listeners to be part of the program by calling 800-621-8890 or by sending an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Let us welcome now Renee Fox. Renee is co-chair of the Smoke-Free Policy at Eastern Kentucky University and coordinator of the Health and Well-Being Program at EKU. Renee, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Anything further you want to add about how the smoke-free policy, the tobacco-free policy on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University has been implemented and how that is working out?
Yeah, we've seen an increase. We've offered tobacco cessation programs on campus for quite some time now. And since we have gone tobacco-free, we have seen an increase in participation. We do offer free nicotine replacement therapy for everyone on campus. We have two on-site programs. We do the Cooper-Clayton program that was developed at University of Kentucky. And that is a 12-week program that really focuses on creating behavior change to on your journey to become a non-tobacco user. We also offer the American Cancer Society's Fresh Start program that really has a lot of emphasis on planning a successful quit attempt. So both of those programs we have, you know, starting in the next coming weeks, and people can sign up through that. You know, they can contact me directly and sign up through our Healthy You at EKU website. We also have a tobacco-free website where we list other resources that are available online. We promote the 1-800-QUIT-NOW coach program that Angela mentioned earlier. And our tobacco-free website is tobaccofree.eku.edu. And you can find our policy on that page as well.
On our WEKU website, we received a message from a listener identifying as climate desperate. People choose handles when they post messages like that. This person writes, "What about controlled outdoor smoking policies for places like college campuses? I greatly prefer the Berea College model over the unenforceable approach at EKU. BC has built smokers' outdoor gazebos around campus, which has allowed smokers an outlet, and waste containers are right there. Also remember, many of the folks who are supposed to enforce these kinds of blanket outdoor rules, like security officers, are smokers themselves. Trying to force them to smoke in their cars would be far worse, or in most cases, the overreaching rules just get flaunted." Sounds like this would be a good one for Renee's response as well.
Yeah, we did a lot of research before drafting our policy, looking at best practices around the country and looking at what other universities and other workplaces have done. And the best practice model is really to do a 100% tobacco-free instead of having those dedicated areas. And in our campus, that does include even vehicles and parking lots. So any place on campus, you know, that is prohibited. But we do, again, offer the free nicotine replacement therapy, you know, that can help smokers, you know, get through the workday. So we're not asking people to quit. We're not telling them to quit. But if they are ready to quit, we are here to help them.
Let's go back to the telephone and talk to Cody from Lexington. Cody, thank you for calling Eastern Standard. You are on the air. Go right ahead. Are you there, Cody?
Yeah.
Go right ahead with your question.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to add to a comment that one of your guests made earlier about the dangers of e-cigarettes and the liquid associated with them. A lot of those deaths or dangers have come from not the liquid itself, because most people know the danger of nicotine, but the irresponsibility in leaving it out around their children. And also, I'd just like to say that I was a smoker for 8 years and switched to electronic cigarettes. And it's just really disappointing to see electronic cigarette users trying to do something better for themselves, but still being placed in the same category as smokers. And that's all I had to say.
Cody, thank you so much for your comment. Any reactions from any of our guests? We have with us Dr. Jack Rutherford, chair and professor. Well, actually, he's not on microphone at the moment. I should mention Dr. Robert Pierce, extension tobacco specialist at the University of Kentucky, Angela Criswell from the Kentucky Department of Public Health, Amy Barkley of the Statewide Smoke-Free Coalition. Amy, what do you think about, you know, do you not see the development of the e-cigarettes as a positive movement, basically stating, hey, you know, kind of accepting the fact that cigarettes are on their way out? So why not come up with a replacement? You don't have an opposition. And does the state legislation actually address e-cigarettes, now that I think of that?
Lots of questions in there, John.
Sorry about that.
That's perfectly fine.
Because, just pick one.
You're underscoring the fact that we could have an entire show on e-cigarettes. First, let me congratulate Cody on quitting smoking. This is a really controversial issue, even in the public health community. If everyone who smoked e-cigarettes could totally get off of combustible tobacco products and then eventually get off of e-cigarettes so they're not a lifetime nicotine addict, that would be great. But what we're finding so far that's happening is people are just using it when they can't smoke. And no, e-cigarettes will be regulated by the FDA so that possibly, hopefully, so that we can address some of the poisoning issues. You know, for instance, the health groups have recommended that they be in childproof packaging and so forth. So, you know, e-cigarettes will be regulated, and they will have to use research to base their claims about whether people are really quitting or not, you know, in order to make that claim. Now, we're not stopping anyone from using e-cigarettes. Just as Renee said, we're not stopping people from smoking if they don't want to smoke. But the state law does include e-cigarettes because, one, it creates confusion. A lot of these e-cigarette products sort of look like cigarettes and produce a, you know, cloud that looks like smoke, even though it isn't. And then also, most importantly, I think, we still don't know very much about what's in e-cigarettes and how they affect the bystander. I think we could all agree that probably it's better than secondhand smoke, but it's still not safe. And it does produce a fine aerosol that has particles that get in your lungs that can cause all kinds of problems. There is a tremendous amount of chemicals in e-cigarettes. So, again, I think anecdotally we can say they're probably safer, but are they going to be a complete substitute for smoking? Probably not. And, in fact, they might keep more people smoking and encourage kids to start who may not have started. You know, they may try the e-cigarette and then move on to regular cigarettes. So it's a really complicated issue, but again, just like with smoking, anyone who wants to smoke can do that. Anyone who wants to use an e-cigarette can do that, and if they're going to totally quit tobacco products because of that, wonderful. But we still don't think that they need to be used inside, because we don't know about the safety. In fact, we know that they do have some harmful toxins in them for sure. So why get rid of one toxin and introduce another? You know, if we were to eliminate secondhand smoke but allow e-cigarettes, we'd still have some chemicals affecting other people who have chosen not to use them. So I hope that helps. But, you know, we are addressing this at a number of fronts. Kentucky passed a law last year that said youth can't buy e-cigarettes. So, I mean, again, lots to talk about with e-cigarettes. But, again, we're asking people to step outside with those as well with House Bill 145.
Let's talk to Tim from Harlan. Tim, thank you for calling Eastern Standard. You are on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi, my name is Tim. I'm from Harlan. And I wanted to kind of address what Alfred had said before. I myself am not a smoker, and I don't personally care for the smell of smoke and everything, but I really do not feel it's our legislation's right to tell us what not to do, because I just feel a lot like what Alfred said. I feel like our rights are kind of being trampled on. In the spirit of public safety, if you use that as your argument, you could pretty much confine a person to a single room and not move because they might cause problems. If the whole thing with smoking works and we completely outlaw it in every conceivable way in the United States, what do we do next? Okay, any form of alcoholic beverage causes problems. And I'm not talking about drinking and driving. I'm talking about the toll it has on personal relationships, and people are more likely to be violent when they're drunk or make bad decisions economically when they're drunk. So we should outlaw all forms of alcohol. And then it's going to be, well, we should outlaw all forms of violent television or movies because they depict things that could give us the wrong idea. And then you start on the slippery slope of saying what you can and can't do. This is where you're ending up. You're getting to the point where, oh, we don't want to give the person the wrong ideas. And if we remember correctly in our history, that was one of the reasons why women and black people were not allowed to learn how to read, because it might infect them with the wrong type of ideas.
Big questions you raised there, Tim. Of course, we tried prohibition in this country. That went away pretty quickly. So let me ask other listeners to respond to Tim's comments, as well as our guests on the panel today. This is Eastern Standard, 800-621-8890. The issue of freedom, constitutional freedom, the ability, when do we start encroaching so much on people's lives that we take away freedoms that begin to destroy the quality of all of our lives? And let me ask Angela from the Kentucky Department of Public Health, how do we make that distinction? There are a lot of unhealthy things out there, as Tim points out. Alcohol is unhealthy. There are many foods that are unhealthy. Does your department care about those and get involved in those?
Well, let me first of all say that, when Lexington passed their smoke-free ordinance, it was immediately challenged in the courts. And in 2004, the Kentucky Supreme Court said that the protection of public health is not only a right but a manifest duty of government. We know from the science the devastating impact that exposure to secondhand smoke has. And asking people to step outside is a reasonable accommodation to protect the public health. We have in our society many, many laws that protect public health that impact private business, such as, all sorts of regulations on food safety and worker licensing, et cetera. So, it seems that this is definitely a reasonable policy given what we know about the impact of secondhand smoke. When it comes to public health and these other issues, and there are so many issues, our role is to educate and inform. So, we hope that through education, people will be able to make wise behavior choices that will promote their public, their individual health and the health of society.
I mean, I will admit ignorance on this subject, but we don't really do we know any what goes on in other countries in terms of smoking regulation on our borders? What happens in Mexico and in Canada? What happens in European countries? Are there other places where smoke-free policies are in place? Are there nations where folks are free to smoke as we did during the Mad Men era of the U.S.? Amy Barkley?
Yeah, certainly there are a number of countries where you do feel like you're going back in time to the Mad Men era, but there are also many countries, entire countries that have gone smoke-free, including England, Ireland, Scotland, Italy, many European countries, many South American countries, and even recently, I hesitate to bring this up, but Beijing went smoke-free, the city of Beijing, so in China. So, I mean, it's a growing trend worldwide for all the reasons Angela and your other guests have stated. Again, people, we are not banning smoking. I think that's what's it's difficult as we're promoting this smoke-free law because many people want to call it a smoking ban. It does ban smoking in indoor workplaces, but it does not ban smoking altogether. And the gentleman who just called in brought up alcohol. It's sort of the same thing. Alcohol is legal. People can use it and abuse it, unfortunately. In America, as he points out, we have a right to be wrong and to do stupid things. But we, as a society, restrict the use of alcohol. And that's all we're asking here with the smoke-free law is to restrict smoking, to discourage smoking. We do that with all kinds of dangerous things, but we do still allow people to do it, just not where they're going to hurt someone else.
All right.
Just like we have drunk driving laws, so you can drink, but you can't hurt somebody else.
Amy, I want to come back to you as we wrap up the show here in a couple of moments and talk about the status of legislation, but we did have a comment from another poster on our website calling himself or herself Deke42, basically raising the question of business owners. Why not allow business owners to make the decision about whether they allow smoking in their place of business or not? Have them label the door with a smoke here or a smoke-free sign. If you don't like the smoke, go to another place. Doesn't that fall very much within our approach to free enterprise in this country? I just won't do business with people who make it uncomfortable for me because I can't breathe.
Well, no, we can't leave it to private businesses. Just, you know, it's, many have done the right thing and prohibited smoking and done just that, put a sign up and said no smoking, whether their city or state or country allows it or not. But we do require that that business have fire exits and sprinkler systems and handicapped accessibility, and as Angela pointed out, food safety. There are many, many restrictions on private businesses to protect the public health.
Amy, Angela did have a comment on this. Let me let her have a minute here.
Oh, I just wanted to kind of follow up and comment in regard to voluntary policy. That doesn't protect the employees, in that many employees don't really have many options in terms of where they work. And I remember a couple of years ago at a legislative hearing, one of the people providing testimony was a constitutional law professor up in Northern Kentucky, John Bickers, and he described bussing tables as a law student. And he asked legislators not to forget the invisible people, those people who don't have many choices. And this law is designed to protect them.
Okay, Amy Barkley, we've got about a minute. Talk about the status of legislation. This is House Bill 145. There have been similar bills introduced in the past in the General Assembly. Is this one going to pass? And why is that likely?
Well, we sure hope so. And I hope everyone who's supportive will call their legislators and ask them to support this. It will go to committee, hopefully, the first week of session. We're not positive about that, but we're hoping for passage since the governor and the Speaker of the House and many legislators do support it. Then it'll move on to the Senate where, you know, quite candidly, we don't have as much support, but we're hoping that this is going to be the year. After 4 years of education, we feel like there are no more excuses. It's time to go ahead and do this and, you know, join the other 24 states who've passed similar policies.
Okay. Well, this discussion, I'm sure, will continue, and we'll be hearing more about it in the next couple of weeks as the General Assembly reconvenes into active lawmaking at the beginning of February. We want to say thanks to our guests on today's Eastern Standard, Dr. Jack Rutherford, Dr. Robert Pierce, Angela Criswell. We've also heard from Amy Barkley and from Renee Fox. Thank you all for being part of this week's Eastern Standard, a production of the WEKU stations at Eastern Kentucky University. This week's program was produced by Richard Turner. We also have help from associate producers Logan Riley and Andrew Moorhead and Morgan Crutchfield. Technical director is Brian Bartlett. Julie Tennell has been on the phones. This show will be available for online listening and downloading as a podcast later this afternoon. We're always interested in hearing from you. Write to us, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. For WEKU and Eastern Standard, I'm John Hingsbergen.